Today is February 23rd, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 116, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I am Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
Did you have to, like, look at the name tag on your shirt to know which name to say?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that I was talking. Someone asked me recently if I had told someone else, you know, did they know who you are? And it's, you know, I'm Brian effing Chaffin. That's the... And when I read the I'm Brian Chaffin, I immediately went back to that conversation.
Well, you know, if you'd like, I could change a script so you introduce yourself as Brian effing Chaffin.
Oh, sweet.
You know, I can do that. I have the power.
You do have the power. Speaking of the power, Aaron Thies. Thies? How do you think that's pronounced?
I'm going to say Thies.
Thies. I like it. He wanted to wrote in saying, I'm missing my Apple Weekly Report. Have you changed the date? It comes out. No.
No, we didn't.
We just didn't do one last week due to my vacation trip and travel and canceled flights and all kinds of mess. The last week's show just didn't happen, so this is episode 116.
Right. And, you know, I guess what it comes down to is, if you want to schedule podcasting and travel, don't try and schedule them at the same time.
Yeah. Which means I guess I'm never traveling ever again, nor are you, by the way.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, at least I got the memo now and not after I'm on the plane.
Indeed. Indeed. Speaking of which, we should mention our friends at Smile on My Mac.
You know, actually we should, because... they make really cool products.
They do make really cool products. They're sponsoring this week's show, as a matter of fact.
Right, and they're offering a really great deal to Apple Weekly Report listeners. They are offering a 20% discount. And thanks to the miracle of technology, my note that had everything about what the discount is for just went away.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, actually, Smile on My Mac is offering all of our AWR listeners a really great deal, which is 20% off of PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro. They have a special website you can go to, smileonmymac.com/AWR. And for those of you that have short attention span or memory issues, PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro are pretty much the best PDF editing apps you can get your hands on if you're not going to be using Acrobat, and in many cases are better than using Acrobat. I mean, you know, I'm in the graphic design world, so I deal with all the pro apps all the time, and there are many, many times when I will use PDF Pen Pro instead of Acrobat to do my PDF editing and form creation.
Mm-hmm. And the 20% off price means that PDF Pen is going to be $39.96 instead of $49.95, and PDF Pen Pro is $75.96. And this deal really is open only to you guys. You can't get this unless you know the page to get. And we'll have the link in the show notes.
Yes, we will.
SmileOnMyMac.com/AWR. And we're really, really glad to have these guys as sponsors. You know, you and I didn't talk about this, Jeff, but it's nice to have a sponsor for these kinds of projects, the podcast, that you like.
You know, you're absolutely right. And when I sit here and say, yeah, I use PDF Pen Pro all the time, I'm not saying that because they're sponsoring the show. I'm saying that because I use PDF Pen Pro all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, we're not saying American Express shouldn't come knocking on the door, but...
you know, actually, they're welcome to come knock on the door.
we're going to always be choosy about the kinds of sponsors we take on the show simply because we are telling you about this stuff, you know? I mean, this is us.
That's true. And if I'm going to say a product's good, it better be good.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, it, That's my reputation.
Indeed. All right. So with that, thanks again to the folks at Smile on My Mac, and we should probably get on with the news, which is what people really want to hear.
Yeah, I'm guessing. As long as we're both here, why not?
Why not?
Microsoft is trying to show its kinder, gentler side to developers. Toshiba bailed on its HD DVD format, and Apple introduced XAN 2 while dropping the XServe RAID from its product lineup. Also, Apple lowered iPod Shuffle pricing, and DoubleTwist launched its media sharing and DRM stripping software.
Microsoft held a special press conference on Thursday morning to announce that it is embracing openness and interoperability between its products and third-party products. The company also pointed out that the move will help meet its legal obligations under a European Commission Court of First Instance Monopoly Abuse ruling. The company said in a prepared statement, quote, "The interoperability principles and actions announced today reflect the changed legal landscape for Microsoft and the IT industry," unquote. Microsoft stated that it is implementing four new, quote-unquote, interoperability principles that include the following: ensuring open connections, promoting data portability, enhancing support for industry standards, and fostering more open engagement with customers and the industry, including open source communities. An unstated fifth principle says that the first don't count. The information is being made available free of charge, and the use of patent-related technologies will include, quote-unquote, reasonable and non-discriminatory licensing terms. Where prior commitments from Microsoft to give competitors and third-party developers access to information necessary for developing Windows-compatible applications have seemed to be commitments in word only, releasing the information on the company's website could show a substantial change in action, or maybe not. The move underscores that even Microsoft can be influenced by industry changes, or maybe not. Microsoft claims that there are over 30,000 pages of documentation available now. How useful that information and documentation will be is ultimately going to be determined by the competitors and developers that have been clamoring for this information for years.
Microsoft competitor and Linux distributor Red Hat responded that it would like to see the company instead make a concrete announcement in support of existing ISO-approved cross-platform standards next week in Geneva. And the European Union said they will monitor whether the principles announced by Microsoft are, in fact, implemented. Now, Ritchie's lesser-known other cousin and Red Hat Executive Vice President and General Counsel Michael Cunningham said, quote, "Red Hat regards this most recent announcement with a healthy dose of skepticism," unquote. Now, he offered three alternative commitments he would rather see Microsoft support. First, supporting open standards instead of continuing to push its proprietary Windows-based formats on developers and consumers. Second, supporting interoperability with open source instead of offering patent licenses that aren't GPL compatible for its protocol information. And finally, a commitment to competing on a level playing field instead of creating an environment that precludes the open source community. Specifically, Mr. Cunningham was referring to Microsoft's quote-unquote promise not to sue open source developers as long as they develop and distribute non-commercial products. The European Union responded to the Microsoft announcement by saying, quote, "The Commission notes that today's announcements follow at least four similar statements by Microsoft in the past on the importance of interoperability. In the course of its ongoing interoperability investigation, the Commission will therefore verify whether Microsoft is complying with EU antitrust rules, whether the principles announced today would end any infringement were they implemented in practice." Sorry, folks, it must be because this is written in European instead of English. Okay, and whether or not the principles announced today are in fact implemented in practice. So, in other words, no one is buying the kinder, gentler Microsoft routine.
Indeed. Apple announced the immediate availability of XAN 2 on Tuesday, the new version of the Enterprise Class Storage Area Network System software.
That's not written in European, so you don't have an excuse.
I have no excuse. Anyway, the new software added the ability to access multiple SAN systems from a single workstation through its new multi-SAN feature. And it also requires macOS 10.10.5 or Leopard. XN2 is also qualified for use with third-party RAID solutions, including, drumroll please, solutions from Promise Technology. Administrators can also preset volume workload settings to improve file streaming, and it intelligently handles different file types. XN2 is priced at $999 US per node.
Apple's Xserve RAID quietly and unceremoniously disappeared from the company's website and online store following the launch of XN2. Xserve RAID was Apple's enterprise-level RAID storage system designed to work with the Xserve and other server-grade systems. The Xserve RAID page on Apple's website now redirects to a server storage page that not so coincidentally shows a Promise RAID system. And although a search for Xserve RAID at the Apple Store shows a link to a product page, clicking through to the page returns a warning that the product is currently unavailable.
Toshiba announced on Tuesday that it is pulling out of the DVD format war and will no longer make or market HD DVD players and recorders. The announcement means that Blu-ray is now the official HD successor to the venerable DVD. The company decided to move quickly now that it is dropping the HD DVD format. New players will stop showing up in retail stores by the end of March, which really means that the company has the gall to continue shipping these effectively worthless devices for another 5 weeks, though admittedly availability will begin dwindling before that. But customers that already own HD DVD players will still be able to get product support from Toshiba for the foreseeable future. And we should also note that they will continue to play the older DVD format. Toshiba's high-definition movie disc format lost several key supporters over the last few months, making it more difficult to compete against Sony's Blu-ray format. The majority of movie studios, along with Walmart, Target, Best Buy, Blockbuster, and Netflix, have already signed on with Blu-ray over HD DVD, leaving only a handful of retailers to support and offer HD DVD products, at least for another 5 weeks. Toshiba is dropping its HD DVD format quicker than some expected. Company president Atsutoshi Nishida commented, quote, "We concluded that a swift decision would be best," unquote. No word yet on when the ritual, typical ritual, will take place.
Okay. Paramount Home Entertainment quietly dropped its support for Toshiba's now-dead HD DVD format in favor of Blu-ray on Thursday. The switch means that now all of the major studios have turned their back on HD DVD, clinching Blu-ray spot as the high-definition successor to DVD. In a statement to The Hollywood Reporter, Paramount said, quote, "We are pleased that the industry is moving to a single high-definition format, as we believe it is in the best interest of the consumer. As we look to releasing our titles on Blu-ray, we will monitor consumer adoption and determine our release plans accordingly," unquote.
Now, our translation of that is, oops.
Pretty much.
Apple introduced the 2-gig version of the iPod Shuffle on Tuesday. Like its 1-gig counterpart, the new Shuffle will be available in silver, blue, green, purple, and red. Along with the higher capacity model announcement, Apple also dropped the price of the 1-gig Shuffle from $79 down to $49. That's $49. So cheap. The 2-gig iPod Shuffle will be available for the end of February for $69, $10 lower than the 1-gig model cost at the beginning of the week. The 1-gig iPod Shuffle is available at its new lower price right now.
And finally, John Lech Johansson, also known as DVD John, is hoping to make media files device independent with his new Double Twist desktop application. The app is the first offering from his Double Twist company and, while still in beta, could offer users a way to move DRM-protected content between otherwise incompatible devices. For now, it's available for Windows only, but a macOS 10 version should be available sometime before mid-year 2008. Double Twist desktop handles the heavy work of converting audio and video file format so they can play on any device instead of only the media player they were originally targeted for. And along with format conversion, the application also removes any copy protection that would prohibit the file from playing. Users can also take advantage of TwistMe, Double Twist's social networking application that allows them to share their audio and video files with approved friends. Apple's iPhone isn't supported yet, but the company plans to add that soon through a mobile Safari-based interface. DVD John gained his fame after breaking the copy protection used in commercial movie DVDs, and then later for breaking Apple's Fair Play copy protection scheme used in media purchased at the iTunes Store.
Okay, that sound, that beautiful sound played by Ricky, means that it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
You know, so aren't we lucky? We have a list of wonderful Context Machine topics for today.
Indeed. It is a lucky day.
It is. And I think that we should just jump right into the middle of Microsoft on this one. And now that I've had a drink of water so I can talk, I'm going to say, what, is this 1998? Microsoft is getting that we have this whole internet thing and need to have interoperability now?
Yeah, you know, I just don't buy it. Microsoft, I mean, everything that they've ever done has been predicated not on the notion of competition, but rather on the notion of making good deals and leveraging market share from one market into another. It's this whole notion of a kinder, gentler Microsoft is bogus at best. I mean, you know, the proof will be in the pudding, and obviously time will tell, and maybe this time they really mean it, but yeah.
You know, I think that they're... All right, here's the deal. I think that Microsoft, by putting out all of this information, because it's some 30,000 odd pages of data on how to make products interoperable with their products. Okay, that's great. I think the bottom line, though, is that the way that they are setting up their licensing is going to very strongly limit the way other developers can use this information.
Oh,
so,
of course.
You know, so on one hand, hey, great, the information's out there. But on the other hand, it's I think, a very crippled form of information.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean,
wow.
I'm almost speechless.
Which is saying a lot.
Yeah, no joke. The funny thing to me about this is that if Microsoft would truly embrace the notion of open standards, that they would find themselves more competitive. Because they could, well, I mean, at least possibly be making products that people could be choosing for the right reasons. Maybe.
Sure.
And I don't think they get that. I mean, you know, keep in mind that the company executives that called open source un-American, that have been attacking, you know, they did their ridiculous and childish best to turn the business world against open source by trying to demonize it in just this, you know, pathetically cartoony kind of way for years.
Right.
And so now, but now they get it. I don't buy it. I just don't buy it.
No, I don't buy it either. And I really think that the Dog and Pony Show that they put on earlier in the week, which, by the way, was that was interesting in and of itself. And anyone that participated in the phone conference thing would probably agree with me. It was so Microsoft. But anyhow, you know, see, now I'm getting speechless as well. This must be quite something we're discussing.
It must be. Well, let's actually move to the to Red Hat's ridiculous response.
There we go. Okay, so Red Hat, you know, they do have some good points and others that I'm certain you're going to have some choice words for.
Yeah, it's only because I told you ahead of time.
Well, right. Yeah. So in this case, my crystal ball is actually working. But yeah, so, you know, you're right. Microsoft is not playing the same game that they want everyone to think they're playing. And Red Hat called them on that. And so in that respect, good for Red Hat, because they're totally getting that what Microsoft is doing is not openly embracing openness. They're openly embracing their own standards and calling that open. And right. Have you heard the old Microsoft joke, how many Microsoft engineers does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I have, but I forget the punchline.
Okay, so the punchline is none. They just declare darkness a new standard.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and you know, it's the same thing here. They're declaring their proprietary standards the new open standard.
Right.
And I think that's behind a lot of what they're doing.
Sure.
So,
but at the same time, I get a little tense with Red Hat's response, particularly the three things that the Michael Cunningham said that he wanted. The first was, folks, I don't know why that amuses me, but it does.
It's better than having you beat on a pan all day.
That's true. Yes, that is true. Screaming Oklahoma at the top of my lungs.
You got my reference. I can't believe it.
I love that movie, too. If you're curious about what we're talking about, feel free to write us. If you'd rather hear shut up, feel free to write us. So anyway, he said he wanted three things. The first was to make a commitment to supporting open standards instead of continuing to push its proprietary Windows-based formats on developers and consumers. Hooray. Absolutely. Absolutely and positively, I really like that. But the second thing was supporting interoperability with open source instead of offering patent licenses that aren't GPL compatible for its protocol information. It's not Microsoft's job to worry about how well its products work with open source anything, unless, of course, they understand the wisdom of doing so.
Right. Okay, now I'm going to sit on the fence just for a minute, and very gingerly, of course. I think that Microsoft is bound to create licensing that they feel fit to create, because it's their company and it's their product proprietary information that they're licensing. So fine, they can create their own thing. Now, the part that I don't like about it, though, is that what they're doing is kind of going Animal Farm on us here, where all developers are equal, but some developers are more equal than others. That's kind of how this feels to me, where they're willing to do all of this licensing stuff for all kinds of people. But if you're doing Linux, you better not be making commercial products.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
absolutely.
Part I don't like.
That part is also ridiculous. See, part of what that stems from is Bill Gates' feeling is that a lot of open source technologies were developed as the result of university-sponsored and effectively paid for research. And the thought has always been, since universities, especially public universities, receive federal funding, that the results of their research that they do, that their graduate students do, that their professors do, that most of those technologies are supposed to go into the marketplace for the greater market to use. So,
okay.
Microsoft doesn't like that the GPL license requires that anything being covered by the license is covered by the GPL license. And the GPL license says that basically anyone can use it for free. Make sense? Right.
Well, you know, if you're in business, business being a very operative word here, to make money, you don't have a very good business model if you're giving away everything for free.
Well, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. There certainly is room for service-oriented companies in the Linux world.
Oh, sure.
There's room for that. And you know, I'm a huge fan of open source, certainly as a concept. I don't use a lot of open source products. I think that open source has a lot of limitations, a lot of practical limitations. For instance, the open source world is never going to make anything work as smoothly as Mac OS X because there's no chief. There's nothing.
Right.
You know, there's a bunch of Indians who are doing really, really cool things, but the Indians tend to be, in this case, doing things that they want to use, you know, and they're directing what it is that they're doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's no one to strong arm everyone and say, no, this stuff's got to work and be cool, et cetera. Anyway, that's discussion for another time.
Right.
But Red Hat saying that Microsoft needs to offer licensing that's compatible with GPL is ridiculous. It's just completely ridiculous. Did I get enough completelys in there?
I think there's room for one more. Can I hear it completely?
Ridiculous.
All right.
It's completely ridiculous because Microsoft's research and the patents that they develop from those research and the technologies that they develop from those research need to be available for the betterment of the company and the shareholders, not for the open source community. You know, just as I have no problem with the open source community and love the open source community and love all the cool things that the open source community does, I also support the right of companies, even Microsoft, to protect its research and development and keep some things proprietary.
You know, that's only fair. If we're going to sit on our high horses, so to speak, and defend Apple and other companies for defending their proprietary technologies, it would be completely wrong for us not to defend Microsoft in the same way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, once Steve Jobs came back, Apple did a far better job of embracing more open standards.
You're absolutely right.
And, you know,
a perfect example is the Darwin Project.
Yeah, the Darwin Project, Safari. There's some other things out there too, but I mean, even you know, the use of AAC is a standard. It's not an open. It's an open standard, but it's one that has to be licensed. A lot of the networking and file system stuff, and you know, all sorts of innards from Mac OS X actually come from. Both the Unix and maybe indirectly the Linux. I feel free to correct me where I'm wrong, folks. But a lot of what's going on in Mac OS X has you know shares its roots with a lot of stuff that actually it shares its roots with the same things that Linux shares its roots with. How's that?
That's a great way to say it.
Thank you.
Spot on.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, corporations do not need to be required to work with open source. Corporations should work with open source where they see it as being wise to do. There is room in the marketplace for open source, and there is room for proprietary standards. I don't like the way Microsoft pursues its proprietary standards, but I am not going to say that Microsoft needs to be doing GPL-compatible stuff. That's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
It is, and, you know, what I would like to see Microsoft do... You know, because we live in this magic utopian world with butterflies, unicorns, and rainbows, I would like to see Microsoft convert to supporting open document formats instead of trying to convince people that their completely closed proprietary formats are open.
Yeah, sure.
But
I'd like to see...
That's not going to happen.
Microsoft... this is not going to happen, but you know, I'd like to see Microsoft license MP3 or AAC. I'd like to see there's just a lot of things that Microsoft could do to really ensure this openness, other than just trying to get everybody else to license its proprietary stuff. It's like the principle behind what the Red Hat folks are saying is fine. It's just their specific way they want to see it implemented. That's where I get tense.
Yeah, that's a problem. But, you know, keep in mind, Microsoft's business model is not built on having any openness at all. It's about total control.
Yeah, just like Apple is about total control. But it's total control because Steve wants total control, as opposed to total control so that they can leverage everything and own it. Steve wants us to think differently his way. Microsoft just wants you to not think.
Wow, what a great and succinct way of putting that.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
So, what do you think about this whole DVD John thing?
DVD John, double twist. Screw that guy.
All right. So here's my take on him, which won't be quite as succinct as that, which is, you know, good for you for being able to figure out how to reverse engineer copy protection schemes so that you can make copies of your own movies for your own personal use. Go, John.
Oh, are you okay. giving me the tools to do that?
Sure. Sure. But, you know, don't be this arrogant doink and try and sell all this software and services now to strip out all of this copy protection that, even though I'm not hip on copy protection, I get why it has to be there right now. You know, I'm looking forward to the day when we don't have to have it. Great response.
I loathe copy protection from, and it particularly speaking with media.
You know, the thing that gets me the most, and I think we've mentioned this before, is that when you put copy protection into a song, into a video, whatever, what you're doing is telling your customer, we don't trust you, we think you're a criminal, and you're ripping us off.
Yeah.
And I don't like being put in that position.
And we probably don't need to rehash that too much, folks. We've spoken at length on this subject through many, many episodes of the Apple Weekly Report. But the issue here is what you said that gave me pause was you said you understand why it had to be there. The labels right. never needed to do this.
They
needed to force Apple to implement Fair Play.
They did not. However, here's my belief on why it had to be there, and it's because if we did not have that, then no deals would have ever happened in the first place. So it was a necessary evil that we're now laden with and working hard to overcome.
Only because of the myopic stupidity of the labels.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely correct on that. And myopic and stupid need to be in uppercase letters completely every time you say that in relation to the recording labels and the RIAA. I firmly believe that. But I also really think that had companies like Apple not agreed to the copy protection in the first place, we never would have gotten to the point where we could have this massive selection of media available for legitimate downloads, and we never would have been able to get to the point where we could have like Steve Jobs open letters saying we don't want DRM and having iTunes Plus songs, the DRM-free music at Amazon.
This, I think that within this year we're going to be DRM-free at the Apple Store. That's my guess. And you know, we've like I had much to do with it, you know, a whole lot to do with it. The industry has reached this point, or is heading to that point, a lot faster than I thought it would happen. But in the meanwhile, back to Double Twist. By the way, you know, before we make ourselves look stupid, right now you can download a beta. Was pricing announced for Double Twist?
You can download this beta for free. Yeah. You can use it for free.
Uh-huh. But is there ever going to be a for-fee download?
You know, I went through all the media information that Double Twist was making available, and I saw nothing about pricing. So my guess, and of course, everyone keep in mind, this is a guess, it is speculation right now. I do not think they're going to charge for their application. I think that what they're probably going to do is have some add-on services and maybe some advertising that goes along with other things that they're doing to generate revenue.
All right, well,
I don't think it's going to be buy the product.
Then I'm back at screw this guy, because he's trying to build a commercial endeavor on the back of breaking DRM. So he is not even indirectly, fairly directly, trying to make money from breaking DRM. And, you know, my opinion for the price of CDs, for any objections to any kind of DRM scheme, is always to boycott it. Don't steal it. Boycott it. And I think he's got a lot of gall trying to make money off of breaking these DRM schemes.
You know,
that's my problem.
Your philosophy. Okay, and that's That's totally cool. I think that's great. Now, your philosophy of boycott instead of break the copyright protection and in essence steal, I think that's fantastic, because what you're doing is advocating a totally legal and upfront way of expressing how you feel about the products and the copyright protection that's embedded into them, as opposed to breaking the law. So
yeah,
good
and
for
it's
you.
Not it's not to me an issue of, you know, whether or not to break the law. I speed, right? I drive too fast. I'm definitely breaking the law.
Well, it's because you're always running late to everything.
That's true. It's not that I'm just like this complete law and order advocate. It's just a matter of self-serving rationalization for stealing something that I've got a problem with. You know, and a lot of this stemmed from a lot of the conversations that I would be either part of or subjected to via comments about people talking about file sharing networks. You know, they shouldn't have to. They shouldn't have to pay for music, or they shouldn't have to pay so much for music because CDs were too expensive. It's particularly before iTunes became a big deal. And
right.
It's that attitude to me just drives me nuts, because it's often kids that have no clue about life, who have never had to support themselves, have never done anything creative whatsoever, have never had to do anything like go into a studio for a week to record a single song, who think that they're bloody well entitled to it. This is kind of the same thing with building a commercial network, endeavor on the back of breaking DRM. It's just kind of the same thing, man. If you don't like it, that's fine. If you want to break your own DRM, I'm actually okay with breaking the law there. But don't share it and don't try to make money off of it.
That's a good way to put it. Now, I think another problem that plays into all of this is the lack of education for the consumer. You know, like right now, if you look at what the RAAA is doing, they're not truly educating people about what's involved in the music process and what it really costs to do things. No, you know, they're just doing the whole scare tactic, shock and awe.
Control.
And yeah, it's a control thing. And they're going about this completely wrong. And okay, here's an example. Earlier in the week, one of the quick tips that I wrote was about why it's wrong to just take graphics that you find on Google Images mm-hmm. and use them in your commercial products.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the reason I wrote that is because I had three instances in a single week where I was dealing with people that were using images that they had not paid for, and they didn't know they were doing anything wrong.
Sure.
They totally didn't get that there's a licensing issue.
Right.
Now, and that applies to music and video as well. A lot of times people simply don't realize that there's something wrong with just taking content and not paying the people that work so hard to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it doesn't help that in this case we were dealing with the labels who were charging absolutely ridiculous prices for CDs, who were doing things like limiting the number of CDs that they were releasing and homogenizing everything and doing everything wrong in terms of serving the music listener.
Oh, they certainly were not doing anything to help their case.
No, it doesn't help that's part of the argument. Because, really, who supports... we should probably move on to another subject, but the... I'm not happy about Double Twist being a commercial endeavor.
Neither am I. When I read everything initially, I thought, okay, there's something just kind of weird here, and I think that it will become very clear before long that a lot of other people think there's something very weird there too.
Yeah, and how about this? How about the at the bottom of the page on the Double Twist homepage, copyright 2007 Double Twist Corporation. Oh, really? Oh, now you're all about copyrights? Now copyrights are important to you, Mr. Johansson?
That's funny. I hadn't noticed that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how when you actually start talking about money, now the copyrights are all, when it's your money, now the copyrights
are
important.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, funny. Funny that. Not that
intense. That's funny.
All right, one more quick thing in the context machine. I think that Apple is showing once again that the enterprise market needs to never trust them.
Oh, Apple, why do you forsake us like this?
Well, we're not enterprise people, and we're talking about the death of the X Server raid.
We are, and but in a sense, Apple is forsaking us because what reflects poorly on the enterprise level will trickle down to the consumer level, and it's things like this make it that much more difficult for people to be able to justify bringing Macs and Apple products into businesses.
Yeah, absolutely, because you can't if you're an enterprise customer, if you're an IT professional, you can't trust Apple. Apple's not going to tell you what's coming. Apple's not going to tell you when it's coming. Apple is not going to support the things that you end up depending on. Give them long enough, and Apple will drop support of whatever enterprise software it is you're using.
You know, I think that's a pretty safe bet, and it just pains me to say that you're right.
Yeah. It pains me too, and it drives me nuts. I mean, the Xserve RAID was a great product. Now, my guess is that it was canceled because it wasn't making money.
You know, that's
seems reasonable.
I find that crazy. It seems reasonable, but I find it crazy because I have talked to so many people in the at the enterprise level that would say things like, "You know, we went out and bought all these Dell Blade servers, and when it was time for RAIDs, we went to Apple because their product was so much better and so much cheaper than anyone else's." Yeah, I mean, people were just gobbling these things up at the enterprise level, at least from the limited perspective that I have.
Yeah, Apple had a knockout product with the Xserve RAID. It was so much cheaper than competing products, and it was a fantastic product. Now, I can only assume that it wasn't making money, and that's why they dropped it. Because if it was making money and they dropped it, then that shows that not only do they not understand the enterprise market, they're just crazy stupid.
They don't understand economics.
Yeah, and that's not the case because the company's making money hand over fist. So, but to me, the solution for the Xserve RAID to not making money is not to drop it, but to change how you're marketing it and selling it.
Yeah.
I mean, do something because the real issue here, this is not about the Xserve RAID. This is about this issue of enterprise and IT people knowing that they can trust Apple. Because for you know, probably 20 years now, maybe 15 to 20 years, Apple has shown enterprise people that they cannot be trusted. They shift the landscape.
True.
They drop support. They change things. Again, they won't, and this is, of course, especially under Steve Jobs' penchant for secrecy, you know, they simply cannot tell their enterprise people what's coming because then Steve wouldn't be able to control the message.
You know, you said something earlier in the week when we were discussing these product announcements and dismissals as they were happening. What you said was, I would absolutely hate to have to work for Apple Enterprise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? It drives me nuts.
Oh, I cannot imagine what Apple's enterprise salespeople had to deal with an hour after all this started to surface.
Yeah. Can you imagine being an Apple Enterprise salesperson and selling, say, 150 Mac Pros or iMacs, having them delivered? And then a week later, having an update to those machines announced, and then having to deal with your customers being really tense.
I think really tense is something of an understatement.
Yes, something of an understatement.
I'm sure that many people do the freak and refreak when that stuff happens, and then all that gets directed right back to that Apple Enterprise salesperson.
Mm-hmm. Big part of Apple's success, it cannot be denied that a big part of Apple's success right now is their ability to control that secret and then get the excitement going and blah, 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 blah. But the issue of trust is a whole nother and completely avoidable issue. All Apple has to do is be consistent with its enterprise offerings to regain that trust. And killing the RAID at this point, the Xserve RAID at this point, I think is just cementing Apple's inability to compete in the enterprise market.
I agree. And to put salt in the wound, to not even tell anyone. I mean, I figured this out by accident. After all the announcements came out, I decided to go to Apple's website and configure some systems just to see what overall pricing was going to be. And I went to throw in an Xserve RAID. and I couldn't find it. And I mean, that's how I came across it. It was just, right. It was by chance.
And you
that's
rock,
a very uncool way to deal with this.
Yeah, it is an uncool way to deal with it, in my opinion. So be it. Apple's making a ton of money. Shareholders are happy, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, there you go.
All right.
All right, so I have a question for you, Brian. Uh-huh. Have we mentioned yet that that our podcast was reviewed?
Nope. We should probably mention that.
We should, and I can't believe we made it this far into this episode without actually mentioning that.
Well, what a great note to What's close on, too. The folks over at the podcast show, at thatpodcastshow.com, reviewed our podcast in episode 12.
They did, and they spoke very highly of us, which was fantastic. So thank you very much, guys, or gals, or both.
Yep. Thank you very kindly. We actually got a 4 out of 5 star rating. They said the one big piece of criticism is that sometimes our banter seems forced, which it's interesting to me to hear that because I seldom feel that our show is forced, because in large part the only thing that we rehearse is the reading of the news at the top of the show.
Although based on today's reading, I don't think people will believe that.
Well, nonetheless, we really appreciate their feedback, and we appreciate the review. You can hear what that podcast show is basically a review of other podcast shows. So you can find, or you know, hopefully at least find podcasts that you're interested in.
Yeah, and of course we'll have a link to that review in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and we thank them very much for the attention, for the kind words, for the great rating, and we thank you, the listener, for being here with us.
Yes, we do. And we want to remind everyone that if you have anything to comment on, add, or question about our podcast or, you know, whatever, life in general, we're easy, send us an email at awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that about wraps it up for this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. That's like you, me, Jeff, or John, and some other good people. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thanks, Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. That was recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Have a great week.